Welcome to the Free Cities Podcast. My name is Timothy Allen, and this is the official podcast of the Free Cities Foundation. This is episode number 2 of the Free Cities Podcast, and this week I'm coming to you from the island of Roatan in Honduras. I've come here to visit a place called Prospera. Now, for those of you that don't know, Prospera is a private charter city and special economic zone on this island. And I've come here to speak with Ricardo Gonzalez, who is a council member at Prospera. Prospera is based on the Honduran ZA law. ZAs are zones for employment and economic development, and it has its own civil law and regulatory structure, independent of that of Honduras. This conversation is basically a deep dive into everything Prospera, including its history and the history of the ZA law, what it's like to live in a place like Prospera, what it's like to work here, and what it's like to deal with a government in respect to setting up a ZA. This was the first time I've ever been to a place like Prospera, so many of my questions are pretty basic, but hopefully you'll get as much out of the answers as I did. Ricardo is very thorough in his explanations, and I'm truly thankful for the time I spent with him. So, without further ado, it just leaves me to say to you, please relax, sit back, and hopefully enjoy my conversation with Ricardo Gonzalez. We're in Prospera, on the island of Roatan in Honduras, and we're in a lovely building overlooking sort of semi jungle, and which on a hillside which goes down to the ocean just over there. And we must be in the rainy season, is that right? Because it's raining a lot.
That's right. Yeah, from October and on, it's raining till maybe mid February next year.
Right. So thanks for inviting us here. And can you just tell us who you are and what your role is here?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Ricardo Gonzalez. I am Honduras Prospera's in-house council member here in the ground, you know, setting up base. I see everything Prospera legal and Honduran compliance jurisdictions. I also help the business development team with basically helping entrepreneurs from Honduras and the world learn more about how Prospera works and how it can better suit their needs as a jurisdiction and a government as a service platform.
And what about your sort of like personal history yourself prior to this? Obviously, you're from Roatan, or?
Well, no, I was born and raised in the capital, Tegucigalpa. I lived there all my way through high school. Right after that, I had sort of an opportunity to start over in the second biggest city of Honduras, San Pedro Sula. Not necessarily because I wanted to, but my parents moved to that city right after high school. So that's where I developed my professional career and my college years as well. I studied as an attorney in law school there. And right after law school, I decided that I wanted to start up a law firm that was gonna be catered specifically for startups. So I've always been startup centric in my life. That's the way I wanted to help people. As a startup attorney, my main focus was to help Hondurans navigate the Honduran legal system for them to be able to basically fulfill their dream goal of being self-employed and creating their own business and pues, like growing, right? And very early on in the first couple of years of having this law firm, myself and my partners noticed that Honduras was lacking a lot on the startup ecosystem. So we had a very nice small community of entrepreneurs in the country. However, I would notice that very quickly you would just get all the market cap you could in the first 2 to 3 years of your startup. And then if you do not envision globalizing yourself and expanding into foreign markets, then you would never really grow beyond a very small market. And since we're in Central America, we are an emerging market. We are not very well developed. So I decided that I wanted to go get my corporate law master's degree at Penn State University in the US with the whole intention to learn how corporate law worked in the US on a startup scale, and literally took courses to develop my skills to understand how startups in the US works, how the incorporation process looks like, and then bring that back here to Honduras and eventually bring my Honduran entrepreneur clients to the US for them to globalize, access better funding, better jurisdictions, better taxation and whatnot. And very serendipitous, I would say. A friend of mine was already working for Prospera, and he's like visiting the US, and he's like, hey, I'm pretty close to you. I want to visit you, or you can just come and visit me. I'm in Maryland. And I just picked up a car, went to pick him up. And he's like, hey, but you know, stay a night. I actually want you to meet my boss, Eric Brimmen. And I want you to hear about what the project he's doing right now is. And so having some crab cakes in Maryland, which I've heard are pretty famous for, we sat down with Trey Goff as well. And they essentially pitched me this place, right? So what do you think about a place where you had a very amicable regulatory environment, where taxation was very low, where you don't have to worry about bureaucracy and access to justice is swift and effective? And among other things, I'm just hearing about this place or everything that I wanted for my Honduran entrepreneur clients. That's what I wanted for them. And as I'm listening to Eric and Trey go on and on and on explaining Prospera to me without telling me what Prospera was, this was before Prospera came public. I told him, this sounds fantastic. Like, this is very aligned to what I already want for my Honduran clients. This is exactly what I was looking for. And he just goes, well, what do you think about the fact that I'm doing that in your country already? And this is what we're doing. And he just introduces Prospera to me and all that. And I'm like, this is fantastic. This is what I wanted. So right after I graduated from my master's degree, my friend reached out to me and said, hey, you already graduated. Are you ready to come on board? I'm like, wait, can I? And he's like, yeah, for sure. Like, you have the common law background, which we apply inside of Prospera. You're already a civil law Honduran attorney, and you're also very startup inclined. So you very much fit what we're trying to accomplish here. You're basically a Honduran who's going to be able to show Prospera itself how to better mix and match with what best practices would be in comparison to the Honduran regulation.
As I was listening to you then, it occurred to me maybe I should hear your definition of what Prospera is, because there may be there most probably will be a few people out there that aren't necessarily sure what it is. I'd quite like to know physically what it is, according to you, but also after that, like maybe ideologically for you, it seems that you were interested in the concept behind Prospera, and that other people may not be as inspiring.
Right. Well, yeah. So Prospera itself is a platform that catalyzes opportunities and prosperity by providing the best governance services that are privately handled to people from across the world and Honduras to enjoy from less bureaucracy, less constriction, and more freedom of speech, market, private property, and whatnot. So Prospera as a platform just provides this great platform that's not necessarily a physical space, but a platform that you could use for your businesses or just to come live on a freer part of the world.
But I mean, as far as I can tell, this is most definitely a physical place.
Yes.
And it's got buildings, and there's houses, there's accommodation being built, and I'm very much in. I mean, educate me on this. You know, like, how big is it? You know, how many buildings are there already here? What's planned? You know?
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, definitely. So Prospera, it is a place, in fact, yes. But Prospera is the platform. And then Prospera has built this governance platform that is to be replicated in different parts of the world. So Prospera is not just here where we're sitting down right now. Prospera could potentially be somewhere else in other countries. And different sites have different names. For instance, right now we're sitting in St. John's Bay. That's the name we've given to this Roatan development that we're doing under the Prospera platform. So we also have another hub in La Ceiba, which is going to be more industrial. The hub here in St. John's Bay is meant to be more of a financial center with more service-oriented businesses. And then in La Ceiba, we're looking to be more industrial, more factories, more import-export activities. So currently here in St. John's Bay, we are sitting in the Beta building. The Beta building will, I know Trey already mentioned it about a little bit in the Liberty in Our Lifetimes conference, but this is our first building where we proved the concept that by law, the SERE law gave us through the government of Honduras the ability to be functionally self-autonomous in the regulations that we can generate. Right.
Can I just butt in a little bit and have you elaborate a little bit on what a ZETA is, in case someone doesn't know?
Yeah, for sure.
What does it? It stands for something, right?
Yeah. So ZETA stands for Zones of Economic Employment and Development. It's a law that was passed back in 2013 by the Honduran government, essentially to be able to create these platforms that would essentially become known as charter cities, in a way in which the government gives a concession of land that is purchased by the developers of the SERE to essentially then have them try out a better way to do things, right? So the SERE law establishes that you can create your own municipal-like authority that then would promulgate different regulations and govern in regards to taxes, to registries, to norms in general. So the SERE is the law that gives life to charter cities in Honduras.
And what about the size of this place, the area? Is there a limit to the amount of land that a ZETA can occupy? I'm interested to know how a government, how you approach a government to basically sort of like say, well, we kind of want to do our own thing here.
Right. So the SERE law establishes already what areas can be converted into SERE land. So you're basically limited, and I cannot give you a specific number because this is depending on how much land you're able to acquire, how much land can you buy from people and private entities. But itself, the government is not like giving you the whole country. Like, you're going to just do this anywhere you want. It has to be low density areas where there's no people living, where you can essentially start from scratch and start that development. And if at some point, well, anybody else wants to integrate their communities into the SERE platform, the Prospera platform, then they would have to go into a more public voting procedure in which people would say, like, yes, I'm in favor of us subjecting ourselves to that jurisdiction. So it's voluntarily. Like, everybody could become part of it, but it has to be in certain specific zones that the law already establishes. And for instance, right now we're sitting in 58 acres of land. That is the first 58 acres of land that we acquired to start building this platform. And in total, with all the properties that have already been incorporated, not only these 58 acres, but the rest, it's becoming around 700 acres. They're not all adjacent. They don't have to be next to each other. But it also serves as the hubs that I was speaking about prior to this. That you have St. John's Bay here, you're going to have something else in La Ceiba, and we can potentially have somewhere, some other hub named differently, but always under the Prospera platform in other part of the country.
Give me an example of where the Prospera platform's rules differ, very different from the government's rules, let's say. I'm trying to understand, you know, what the difference is, let's say. Give me a really obvious example of one that's quite distinct.
Right. Okay, so very right off the bat, we operate under common law. Honduras is a civil law country, so we follow something that's called Roman law. That's where it all derives. It's black and white letter law that you just follow by the book. Then in Prospera, we are using common law because it's more flexible, more convenient for investment in companies itself. So just having two different legal systems entirely, it's already a big difference from the main government. But not only that, our registers are different, our procedures are different. Bureaucracy-wise is much, much less than the regular government of Honduras. Steps to creating entities or to becoming a resident are much straightforward and easier to complete than if you go through the national level. And in itself, it just provides a ton of benefits from taxation, which is super low here in Prospera in comparison to many places in the world, but especially Honduras. And then import regulations, entity creation, registry of humans who are going to start operating individually or just coming to live here. So it's almost a completely set of rules that are different than the national government. However, we are still under the supervision of the government by the Committee of Adoption of Better Practices, which is a branch of the executive power that oversees the regulation that we are trying to approve. And that's just the regulatory side of the government, but also we have a... Sorry, went on a tangent there.
Sorry, what's that hissing noise? It's actually the rain coming down.
It really picks it up. Yeah.
Let me just butt in then,
yeah.
Because I'm listening to you saying how amazing it is here and how easy it is than in other parts of Honduras. And I'm thinking, surely that makes the government feel pretty insecure about what they're doing. I mean, how does that side of it work if what you're offering here is bureaucratically better, possibly socially better, I don't know, you know. Do they look at it, or are they looking at it and going, well, we should mimic that, or we should stop that, or we should, you know?
Yeah, so effectively, I think that that's what we're going for. I think that Prospera itself is going to be an example of competitive governance on a local level, to which point, not the main government first, but probably other municipalities are going to be like, okay, they're having a ton of success by applying that specific regime they're using. We want some of that. So I would expect that in the next 5 to 10 years, you would see municipalities trying to seek some type of government-approved program similar to CEDES that would allow the municipality to have as much of autonomy as we have, that would allow them to channelize their prosperity that way. And that eventually would make the whole government say, okay, we need to be more competitive because everybody's just going there, but we're not getting as much money from there as we could if we just tax it at the regular level. So how can we start using their regulation to be mimicked and implemented into the rest of the country?
And you're personally quite positive about the idea that a government might try and be more competitive.
I think
it's not something they're well known for.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think at the end of the day, competition is good. Competition has always been healthy. Of course, it can get out of hand. But on this scenario, like what I would expect is to say, okay, many people say, okay, why don't you just not make the whole country a city? Why don't we just change everything? And I think that it's not something bad. I think that's something good. If progressively you start trying to mimic better practices that are already being implemented in the country, then it makes a lot of sense that those things go rippling out of the city and into the national government and effectively making everybody's lives better and easier.
Yeah, I totally agree with the idea and the concept. What I slightly struggle with is the notion that a government would shoot itself in the foot like that, as we say. It's like allowing, in one way, you could see it as you allow a Trojan horse in, and the horse then completely changes everything. But like I say, historically, governments aren't notorious for wanting to be more competitive because they have a monopoly on the rules on the whole. So do you know much about the process as it began of when the Honduran government were first approached with this idea and what kind of hoops that were needed to be jumped through in order to sort of allow to arrive at this situation?
Of course. So think about this. Special economic zones are better known and implemented in developing countries more than they are in countries that have already been developed, like the US or European countries that are already well off. The reason special economic zones exist, especially why Prospera exists, is because as a developing country, we've had flaws all across history that have stopped or hindered our development. And doing it the way that we've been doing it for the last 100 years has not worked. It has not proven to be successful. So it's not as much as shooting yourself as a government in the foot, but rather saying like, we need to try something different to get different results than what we've had in the past. So at the beginning, the government back in the 2010s, 2012, they went to approve this law that was substantially more radical, I'd say. So it was more in accordance to what Paul Romer wanted when he defined a charter city, right? It was almost completely autonomous, completely detached from the host country. It was itself a government instead of another government, right? And that, of course, got repealed. That really quickly, the Honduran government says, like, no, this is too crazy. This is too much. That's too much power. And that's exactly what people were saying at the moment. Like, this is a state inside of a state. So that law got repealed and it was even seen at the Supreme Court level. And the Supreme Court says, like, hey, no, you got to, like, look at this and change all these things if you ever want to try this again. So sure thing, they went, go back to the drawing board and start scraping off things that were unconstitutional or were against national treaties or that would hinder sovereignty from the Honduran government into these specific zones. So after cutting, trimming, and fixing, they presented the SETI law as we know it now. And after a review again by the Supreme Court, they say, okay, we judge and we rule that everything that we asked them to change got changed. And now this is not a violation of the Constitution or the international treaties. It does not affect sovereignty. This now can work as is. And that's more or less when in 2013, the SETI law was approved. And the Supreme Court ruled in favor of it. And ever since then, the government has been looking for investors to say, like, hey, I have this very cool law right now that you could try out. Who's a taker? Who wants to come and actually invest in Honduras under this set of rules that are substantially better than almost anything there is in the region? And sure thing, eventually, Prospera caught wind of this law and said, okay, this is the place where we can do what we were already planning on doing. We've been working for almost a decade on getting all of our regulations, all of our things together. And this is the country where we can do it. And well, we have the advantage of being an amazing paradise island where not only you have a great amount of regulations, but you also have usually an amazing weather.
I like the sound of it. It's very comforting hearing the rain out there. So, okay, you've changed my mind. So arguably then the government had foresight. They didn't shoot themselves in the foot, you could say. They thought that what they may have done in the future will, the seeds they're sowing now will be reaped in the future.
Yeah, I mean, what's the definition of crazy? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting something to change. So something different had to happen for eventual development to happen. So this is it.
You said earlier that you, when you heard about Prospera, you realized that you were kind of quite ideologically aligned with what was going on here. Was that something that was in your consciousness before, or was it that you heard about it and then went, oh yeah, yeah, you know?
So I was already into a lot of studies. I worked at a think tank. That's where I did most of my internship for law school. And I was already ideologically inclined into the whole concept of free cities and whatnot. I already knew about the SETI law back in the time. I had the chance to work with amazing people who were very knowledgeable on these matters. But then I grew more into the startup local environment and I kind of threw that in the back of my head. And when I got it pitched to me by Eric and Trey, I was not really thinking about SETIs at the time. SETIs, again, the law was passed in 2013. I remember hearing about it back then. I was fresh into law school. And then the next time I heard about SETIs was 2020. So it was 7 years from when the law was approved, then 7 years of silence about this law, and then boom, Prospera appears, and it's like, okay, we've been on the works ever since to make sure that we were ready to launch. So when I got a pitch and I heard about it, I knew already about the SETI law and everything about this, but it was more about the fact that I wanted a better place for my Honduran entrepreneurs to be able to grow, for them to create prosperity and not leave the country. Like, I could have definitely just stayed in the US and become an attorney over there and earn a bunch of money, but then that didn't fulfill the goal that I set myself for, that I wanted to help the entrepreneurs of my country progress and prosper and globalize themselves to a better market. That wouldn't help me accomplish that goal.
You're also a living, breathing example of why Azete works as well. Arguably, you chose to come here and bring your own prosperity with you, whatever that might be. So, which is, I assume, would you say that's the core principle of the Zete idea?
Yeah, I would say that since its inception as a thought was to try to stop mass migration out of the country, stop the brain drain. So again, Central America has been known historically for mass migration to the US, looking for better opportunities because of the lack of employment that you could find in Central American countries. So yes, that even it's in the name, the SETI law literally says zones of employment and economic development. So it is meant to be able to catalyze prosperity through the creation of better employment, better salaries, and better regulatory environments that would allow for more people to want to open up businesses and by that create more jobs. So yes, that's completely the whole point of the CETES.
And how long have you been here yourself?
So I've been working for Prospera since August 2020, and I've been here in the island since November 2020. So we're almost at the 2-year mark.
And from your perspective, you personally, in those 2 years, what's changed here?
Oh, a lot. A lot. I came here before the building was even built. The reason I came is because the building was about to be done.
Just describe this building here. It's a very lovely looking modern design based around a courtyard, as far as I can see. I haven't had a proper look around yet, but maybe you could.
So it's like a contemporary architectural design, which has open spaces, wooden facades, very incorporated into nature. On some parts, you're going to be able to see that we avoid chopping trees where we could. Even allowing them to just grow through the roofs and just let the holes for the trees exist. This building was made specifically for us not to just create a concrete jungle in an island, but rather start being more in touch with the nature that's already on it. And all the aesthetic of what we have here is what you would expect of seeing in an island, rather than just going for like just a concrete city. No, you see buildings that are more harmonized into the nature of the island. So here it's been great to see how this building has developed, how many people we've been hiring. It's been crazy demand of Hondurans that from the island and from the mainland have come here to work because salaries are better, conditions are better, taxation is lower, they get more money instead of having a lot of deductions. And seeing so many people here and families being transformed, it's just very gratifying.
Who is here? I see a lot of people moving around. As what I understand, no one's actually living here yet. Is that correct?
Not on this side of Prospera. Yes. So we have the other part at Pristine Bay, which is a more premium development that was already there that we incorporate into the platform. There's people living there already. But in this first 58 acres that we can call ground zero of St. John's Bay, there's no one living here yet. We're currently building a 13-story building that's going to be mixed-use residential, office, and retail areas. But currently, the people living here, not living, but working, these people are employees for different companies from abroad. So Prospera already has over 100 entities created inside of the platform. And these entities are hiring 100 employees for different type of things, finance, administration, operations, marketing, a bunch of different tasks that are being outsourced into the jurisdiction because we provide a channel that basically has low cost in regards to labor costs for our company. So we have a bunch of people from the island and the mainland working this knowledge works, but we also have people from the community from around the island who are working. For instance, we have a small farm down here, if you could see it on the left. These are being taken care of by people from the community who will eventually harvest all of these vegetables and fruits, sell them across the island, take them back home for their families, give them to our kitchen, and give them to our other developments on the other side that has restaurants. So that's helping them get a job where there wasn't none. Currently, we're one of the biggest employers of the island, and we can certainly say we're the biggest employer of the community right next to us. So seeing how much we've improved many people's lives, how much we've changed their mindsets, and how much we've liberated markets here and diversified the economy of the island by introducing different type of lines of work that were not previously here in the island, that just gives me a lot of hope for the future. Because previously you would see islanders that grow up here and say, okay, I want to be a fisherman, I want to work at a hotel, I want to have my own hotel or my own restaurant. So like, you could see that all of their ambitions were very defined by either tourism or the fish industry. But now, like, there's more encouragement for people to start going to school, going to university, learning more things, because now they have a place where knowledge work is required that was previously not there. So the ambition changes.
Can you give me an example of some of the companies that have located themselves here?
Right. So we have a property management company, which is one of the biggest. They manage properties in the U.S. So you have people from sales here on the ground, and they go over, have contract signs, people from collections, people from operations that help out with the different buildings that they already manage. You have accountants from that same company. Then you have programmers, companies that are asking for good quality programmers that not necessarily have to be in the US. You have other people who have schools, for instance, and they are doing different types of educations that are not non-traditional, but are good for the people here in the island. Then you're bringing people who are getting taught how to teach on different ways. So different type of areas are coming here from marketing, sales, operations again. So that's just one of them. But then you also have another outsourcing company that is just all across the board creating jobs for people here.
And when the large building we saw as we were driving in, which is going to have residential units in, are you imagining that they're going to be occupied by people that are working here? Is that the idea?
Yes. So right now the island has one big issue, and that's housing. So because this is such a touristic island, there's not necessarily medium income place to live. Like, there's either very budget friendly places that are not necessarily the best places to live at, or everything is super expensive. So we're trying to solve those things by creating different opportunities of housing situations, by having the luxe areas, but having mid-tier areas and having low-cost opportunities as well for living.
Why do you think it is that there are no mid-tier areas? Why does that happen? That you get, I know what you mean, you get backpacker places,
yeah,
or you get five-star hotels.
Exactly.
So why is that?
I think that that's just because of what I had mentioned, that the lack of economic diversity in regards to the job opportunities present in the island. So here again, you had base level workers that would be waiters or retail workers that would just be living on the minimum wages. But then you would have the super developers or the people who are already retiring. You have expats that are just living the life in the Caribbean, in an island full of luxuries. But there's nothing in the middle that you would say, I have a regular medium income job and living here in the island. So there wasn't that job.
So, I mean, arguably you're trying to, but one of the purposes of a place like this is to build a middle class. Is that right?
I wouldn't say that's the main purpose.
Not the main, middle class. I mean, one of the side effects could be.
I think that's one of the side effects for sure. Like, I wouldn't say the people here working are middle class. I'd say that for all 100 standards, these people would be upper class. If living in the mainland, because of the salaries being much more superior. But definitely that's one of the side effects, people having now medium-sized income that they would require medium-priced housing for them to live in. So yeah, that's some of the things that happen.
So going back to what's happened in the last 2 years, what would you see as the biggest change that's happened since you've been here? Forget the building that's gone up. is the idea of the Zete, or is it the notion of what they are? Is it something that's becoming better known? I'll be honest, I've spoken to a few people on the way here, just because we've met so many Americans, and no one yet has known what it was, and that's a very anecdotal evidence. But so how do you see in 2 years, has anything changed?
Yes, it has changed a lot. So for the first year, we happened to have a political year here in the country. So we were about to have our presidential elections, and that just put us on a bullseye for the opposition of the past government who was in power for the last 12 years. So this opposition that is currently now in power, they were just trying to get into power by saying everything the last government did was wrong. Right. And unfortunately, the Zete law happened in the last 12 years. So consequently, once we started developing and Prospera became public, at the beginning, everything was sunflower and sunshines and whatnot. But then because of the political year, things got changed. There was a lot of misinformation in the air. And then there was a lot of lash out from people who didn't understand it at all. People who were just afraid of something different. But throughout these 2 years and at least this year, I've seen much more of that changed, because we have an open door policy. Anybody who comes to the island and says, like, I want to learn more about Prospera, I want to know about business opportunities, job opportunities, I want to know the truth, I want to see it with my eyes. We have people come from the mainland, from all around the island, and from across the world as well, saying, like, I need to understand better what it is. And once these people have come here and seen the benefits that we offer and seen that people here are not slaving away in a job that doesn't have any meaning. You see people here happy, having lunch, seeing the amazing view we have to the beach, just meeting people that would not normally be here in the island as well. It's just a blend of cultures as well. So I've seen it. I've seen the perspective of people changing as they come to know us, and not only know us, but also know the people who work here, the islanders who work here. They're living examples of saying like, hey, this is not what politicians said it was. Like, I'm working here. I feel free. I feel good. I don't feel constrained, and I'm earning a good salary. And then that helps their families. That helps the economy of the island. I think that's one of the byproducts of us being here, is that we are not just here. We are all across the island. We are going to supermarkets, going to restaurants, going to support any businesses around the island. And this is basically siphoning more people and more people that would have never been here in the island otherwise. They're coming and they're also spending money across the island. So that helps a lot.
Have you got Honduran businesses here?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
No, so the ones you described earlier, were they?
Those are foreign. Those are foreign. So right now, one of my main roles after 2 years is to start helping startups start up here. So that's my main focus currently, is bringing the Honduran talent and mixing it with the rest of the world. This is the door for globalization that I was hoping for. And now we're slowly but surely bringing more entrepreneurs who know better now that they have a better place, instead of going to the US and having to go through hoops that they don't understand or just living the country. We're hosting different events that we call Prosper Summits with different emphasis. And we've been bringing Hondurans and people from across the world that are entrepreneurs as well, mingle them together, probably mix and match some ideas, start up new businesses here in Prospera. And they've seen the benefits. They've seen that it's much easier and they can start operating. And also we have other businesses from Honduras that said, hey, I want to open like a remote position or something that might be able to hire people there, or just have a service online that could potentially grow faster than it would if I just do it in the regular Honduran regulation.
And presumably in the future, you'll have businesses actually moving here, as in providing food, you know, those kind of businesses.
Absolutely. So right now, because of the fact that we are still building, we have this building that, again, it's almost at capacity because we've been hiring so many people so quickly. We have other buildings that are separate from this one that we're going to start to populate and start moving people around. That means that now in other property that has the office space, we're going to need a cafeteria for the people who works there. And we already have a coffee shop that's being installed in that same place. And then in this 13-story building, that's going to have four floors for businesses to open up their offices, and a commercial area on the bottom for people to just open retail businesses. So yes, we are creating the spaces, not ourselves, but looking for developers who develop these buildings and these spaces for people to start opening those businesses. And it's kind of the chicken and the egg type of situation, where how do you bring businesses to the middle of a jungle? And that's just solved by having people working in the middle of the jungle. And then how do you sell houses to people who live in the middle of the jungle? Well, they have jobs in the middle of the jungle, so they need to live close to work. And that is going to bring all the rest of the economy with it.
And I must say, it really is in the middle of the jungle. We drove here down a fantastically windy road that's only paved, that only the last bit of it's paved. And then you kind of arrive here and you're in a small oasis. It's really quite impressive. You know, like, this is my first time here. Can you give me an example of a Honduran startup?
Okay.
So, or in particular, a successful one, or one that excites you, let's say.
One that excites me. So it's many years of working with startups. I have a bunch of them. But if I want to talk about startups that have already come here to Prospera, let's talk about the health tech. We held the health tech summit about a month and a half ago. And we brought several health tech startups here to learn more about the platform and to see how it could work. So we have a platform that eventually helps doctors connect with patients that would not necessarily be able to either move around, or just think about a remote work for doctors, right? So a platform where doctors can provide telemedicine. We have others that are providing not only telemedicine, but are looking for spaces that they can then share clinics with some of the doctors who are eventually going to become medical tourists here in the island. So once we have like the clinics, people are going to say, okay, I want to get out of my place in the US or in the EU, and I just want to go and relax somewhere else, but I don't want to stop working. I still want to help people. You're going to have clinics here available for people that are doctors and say, okay, I'm going to stay here in this island for 3 months. And in those 3 months, I want to help people from the island or from the mainland or whoever, and then just set up their practice for 3 months and get up and leave. So those spaces are going to be available through these apps from the startups. And then you get the fintech. Like right now we have a fintech summit coming up November 18th, and it's going to be crazy big. Like we're expecting people from across the world, from across Honduras, who are just interested in learning how the financial industry works inside of Prospera because of the ease of regulation that we have.
Can you elaborate on how the financial system works within Prospera? Is it very complicated, or is that something that you could explain to my 5-year-old son?
Well, I would love to see how you explain a financial regulation anywhere in the world to a 5-year-old, but...
Well, I regulate his finances. He kind of understands
well,
that.
Well, that's good. You probably tax him, right?
Only a little bit. 20%.
All right. That's a little bit for you, okay.
I fully appreciate that probably a lot of this stuff is not necessarily really that interesting unless you're heavily into those kind of things. But I'm sure some people are interested in that. Like, so let's talk about the governance model or the way. Pick your sort of most, the one you know the most about, the particular aspect of the governance model you know the best about, and explain how it's new, innovative, different, et cetera.
So I'll just give you the best that Prospera has to offer. The one thing that makes us different than any other special economic zone in the world, and is the fact that we have regulatory election. So think about the car factory, right? So what place in the world does the best cars? In theory, let's go for Germany. Germans are known for like good quality vehicles, right? But let's say Germany doesn't have the most attractive regulation for everything else business-wise. They have a good regulation for car manufacturing, but not necessarily taxation or other regulatory environments for those businesses. Here in Prospera, you could open a car factory, and let's say you want to hold yourself accountable for German standards of car manufacturing. You could do that. You could come up and say, at the moment of registering your business, hey, I'm going to be under X, Y, or Z industry, and I want to select this regulation, which is adopting a better practice that currently exists in Honduras, and I want to apply this specifics to what my business is going to be. So I can have German standards of production for vehicles, but not be subjected to the rest of the things that might be too constrictive. So taxation, all those things, you get the best of the Germany's regulation for car manufacturing, but you don't have none of the constrictive stuff from one of those type of countries. So you can choose up to 24 countries of the OECD and choose best practices and then apply them here at Prospera. This is something that no other special economic zone in the world has. The fact that you can come up and pick and choose a best regulation and apply it here while not having to comply with the rest of the things that might be too constrictive.
And enlighten me then, is that something that's set in stone into the future, that particular methodology? Like, say, does that company know that those rules will be the same in 20 years or 10 years? Or this framework, let's say, who decides what the framework is? And how does it change?
Okay, so whenever you become a e-resident, a resident, you start up a business and you sign your agreement of coexistence. An agreement of coexistence is basically a social contract where you say, I voluntarily submit myself to this Prospera jurisdiction, and that becomes sort of an stability agreement. So once you decide, I want to submit myself to this regulation specifically, then you're subjected to that jurisdiction, to that specific regulation in perpetuity until eventually you say, I want to change it. Because it's also malleable. You don't have to stick for it forever. Like you can come up and you can even come up with your own regulation.
But who do you go to?
Okay, yeah, right.
Well, so. say I start my car company and I'm doing it the Mercedes-Benz way. And then now in 10 years time, I realize I want to change that. Who do I go to?
You literally just send us an email. You can send an email, or, well, our eProspera platform is going to be probably in 10 years, more than possible to just change these things online. But as of now, if you wanted to just change the regulation you are operating under, you just notify the general service provider of Prospera that you're going to be changing that regulation for this other regulation.
But hold on a sec. That seems a little bit crazy. I must be misunderstanding. So there are a preordained set of regulations.
Yes.
Within which you can change. Or if you, I'm talking about, they want to change something completely new. Do they need some kind of agreement from...
Right. So, okay, let's say that you now don't want the Germany regulation for your car manufacturing company.
Yeah.
After 10 years, you know you can do a better regulation that suits your needs.
Okay, so what about, all right, what about if actually what you're planning to do, someone thinks is actually a worse version? Like, who is it that's deciding whether or not...
Okay, let's go to that then. So the Prospera Council is the first level of review that the regulation would get. So whenever you're selecting a regulation to apply to your business or to your specific project, the Prospera Council would oversee it with experts, knowledgeable in the matter, and say, yes, this qualifies as a best practice. So for us, we have up to 24 countries of the OECD that we can choose from, and these are already considered best practices. Because the bar is set at anything that is as good or better than Honduran's regulation. That is the bar. Anything that is better than that can be approved. So you can choose from either of the 24 countries of the OECD that are already considered best practices internationally, or you can come up and propose your own regulation. Again, you can go to the example that you already got it, and you have this regulation you want to propose. You send it to the Council of Prospera. The Council of Prospera is going to hire the experts necessary to determine whether this effectively is best practices. Once that's deemed to be best practices, or if it requires an edit, it would be sent back to the applicant and say, hey, you got to change a few of these things for it to be considered best practices. Or hey, if you continue with this regulation, we would not be able to approve it because it might be non-constitutional for Honduras, or it would be in violation of a treaty. So then it would go back to the applicant until they hash out something that they believe is best practices. And then that would be sent to the CAMP. The CAMP is the governmental body that oversees all CEDAs. And they're the ones who at the end would have to approve a new regulation to be implemented here. As long as it's, if it's already been approved here, anybody can use it. But if it's completely new, then the CAMP would have to say, okay, yes, this is best practices.
Is that, I mean, I don't, not that I know much about this, but I would assume in the government it works in a similar way, right? I mean, you know, proposal of regulations,
yeah,
et cetera.
Yeah, sort of like a congressman proposing a bill.
Right. So how do you stop that becoming a new bureaucratic nightmare in the future then? Like, I don't know. Like, what happens to a place like this, you know, 30, 40 years in the future if people are... You imagine all these incentivized people all trying to get what they want. Presumably, there's going to be a lot of bureaucracy, I'd imagine. Is that something that you consider might be a problem, or is...
I'm going to answer this personally, not based on facts, because we haven't been there yet. But would you go ahead and choose something that is quite more complicated, and you know they're going to have to wait for a bit, rather than just choosing a good option that's already there?
Are you talking about me as a car producer, or
any company owner?
Sure. Yeah, I know. I would want the least bureaucracy.
Yeah,
for sure.
You want the least bureaucracy.
Right.
So like, in 10 years, again, any regulation that has already been approved for someone else, it is available for anybody else. So you as a car manufacturing company, you already set the standard that you've already applied the OECD version of German car manufacturing regulation. If I come up as Ricardo Gonzalez and want to start up a car manufacturing business as well, the quickest thing for me to do is just grab that regulation you already have, because I don't need any more approval. It's already been approved. So I'll give you a specific case scenario where Sechet Bank, the first native bank in Honduras Prospera, Sechet Bank came up with their regulation by hiring a big team of lawyers and creating their most optimal regulation. It's called Financial Regulation A, and it's already been approved. It has already been through everything that it had to go, and it has already been published through the Prospera Gazette. And that financial regulation can and will be applied to any other bank institution or financial institution that fits under that specific type of regulation. And they can just go ahead and say, oh, that's already there, I'll take it.
So the theory of these kind of ZAs then, if you sort of extrapolate it to a point in the future where they're all over the world, let's say, let's imagine they are, is it becomes a competitive governance model that ends up with the best practice. Is that the theory of it?
Like, so think about it. So again, let's go to government as a service. What incentivizes a current government anywhere in the world?
Well, yeah, it's a, I'm not quite sure because they have a monopoly already.
There's no incentive. There's no incentive for absolutely nothing else. And as a president, as a congressman, or as a just government official, doesn't matter how good you do your job, there's no bonuses. There is no salary raises or anything that you're going to get just because of doing a good job. So
you also don't get penalized for a bad job on the whole either.
Not as good, not as much as you should, but definitely. So there's no incentive for the regular government, but this government as a service business model, the main incentive is that I have the best practices available for anybody. And as long as you as a business owner inside of Prospera are making money, you're making money that is taxable. And me as a promoter and organizer of this government as a service, I get part of the money that comes out of those taxes. So my revenue is dependent on your success, and your success depends on my regulation. So I want to make sure that I have the best regulation and the best regulatory environment possible for your business to be successful, because as long as you're successful, me as a government will be successful and profitable. So that is the main thing that guarantees that we're going to have better practices in general and less bureaucracy. Because as long as people want to come here and do business, and people want to come and buy here because it's profitable for them as well, then everybody's making money, the government is making money, and because the government is making money, the promoter and organizer behind that is also making money. So everybody gets happy.
Just out of interest, you mentioned earlier about the political divide causing problems before. Did the opposing party get into power?
Yes.
And how are they now with regards to ZAs?
Against, completely against. Again, it was a lot of misinformation. A lot of people still don't understand how it works. There's a lot of the word sovereignty being thrown around, and they are in the works of trying to repeal the law, and they've already started to do so. However, Prospera and any other set inside of Honduras is already covered by a stability agreement signed with the previous government. The set of law itself, in its second to last article, already establishes that in the case of the repeal of the law, it has to guarantee a 10-year transitional period where the acquired rights have to be respected. And then under CAFTA, the R and the Kuwait treaties, all the investment that has already been done is protected to up to 50 years. So we already have a 50-year umbrella to keep operating, whether the government likes the current setup or not. It's something that about acquired rights that they need to respect. So we're currently on the stage of the dialogue with the government. So we are still in the point that we need that sit down with the government to hash it out and say, these are the things that need to be respected, and these are the things that we're willing to concede for you to feel comfortable as much as possible. So we are approaching that specific moment in time where the government and the CEDES of Honduras, there's three CEDES, will have this conversation. And I am betting that by early or maybe finishing the first quarter of next year, we'll already have a more clear panorama of what CEDES are going to be going forwards for the next 50 years.
Is that by any chance a left-right thing? Is it, and if it is or not, are you confident that it's something you might be able to make diplomacy over?
So the current schematic is that, yes, there is a left and right, for sure. We are pro-private property, pro-free market. So that itself like leans towards the right. And the current government is openly talking about socialism and communism and befriending the Venezuelan and Cuban governments. So there is a clear polarization of the Honduran population right now. People on the left and people on the right, and this specific set of models are falling on the right side of it. And that's kind of where things are clashing.
Do you think they do? I see them quite in the middle, actually. I see them as a...
Setis?
Yeah.
They're quite in the middle, because at the end of the day, there's a lot of social protection.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
There's a lot of protection for human rights and private property. So yes, they kind of fall in the middle, but the public perception itself is that it's far right, which is not. It's just a thing of misinformation and misconceptions.
And but what? How confident are you that there will be some olive branches to be thrown towards the current government? Then, is there a? Do you see a future in dialogue, or is it that ideologically opposed?
So regardless of ideology, it's a matter of the well-being of the country. So the full repeal and disrespect of the rights that have been acquired can only be of consequence to the country. So right now, this is one of the safest laws you could have had invested in anywhere in the world. It is secure for 50 years. Like, it's a rock solid protection that the SETI model has. What does it say to the world if a government that has a project that was so secured by international law, constitutional law, and even the organic law, and if that still gets forgotten and thrown up around? Like, what does it say to the people from around the world, and even in Honduras, it's of a government that doesn't respect its laws. So therefore, investment probably, and it's already fallen. Like, we can already see a decrease on foreign investment coming into Honduras because of the legal insecurity and the atmosphere that this current government is creating. And I think it's just a matter that this has been such a radical change from what we had before to what we have now. That's the perception that it creates. I think that it's probably going to improve through the years once the current government notices that they cannot be so far opposed to most things, that they still have to find a middle ground. So yes, it's more of a pain for Honduras in regards to receiving that foreign investment and creation of jobs if they do not respect the property rights acquired.
How about on a more micro level, the community around here? What's the general sense of what's going on here, rightly or wrongly, and how's the feeling towards it? I'm sure there's those in favor and those against.
Absolutely. So it depends on who you ask, of course. As I was mentioning, people who have family members who work here at Prospera or who have been benefited by Prospera can see that Prospera has never meant no harm. Of course, you still have detractors and people who don't like it, and they're just opposed because at some point politicians said, no, this is wrong. But then the community right next to us, that is around 400 to 500 people in there, I would say that most of it, it's in favor of Prospera. And again, we are one of the biggest employers. And one of the biggest fear factors that were created by politicians during the campaign year was talks about expropriation. So it's no secret or it's not uncommon for private projects around the world to expropriate lands for their benefit. It's not even something strange for Honduras. It has happened before. So that was the word that was thrown around quite a bunch: expropriation, ancestral land being taken over by foreigners, and all these things. So of course you can imagine that communities around the island who were basically adjacent to the project feel scared that they might lose their land where they've lived for many generations. And once we tell them, like, hey, we're friendly, it was hard to like get on the good side if politicians said it every single day that no, they're gonna take your land. But after a whole year after the election, right now, you go to I can go safely into that community and talk to people. Most of those people have already seen me, know my face. I would feel no hostility towards myself to just go down there and buy some food or go to a small market down there. A lot of the misconceptions have been cleared out. Of course, ideologically, some people are still against. But in regards to what reality is, the people who have been able to approach here and to learn more by people who have been affected in a positive way by Prospera, because there's no one who has been negatively affected, are now basically becoming ambassadors and spreading the word of these people are here to do good and nothing bad has happened. And to make matters more secure for everybody, Prospera's council approved a regulation stating that we would never expropriate nor acquire land that has ever been expropriated, to make sure that the message is loud and clear. Prospera would never expropriate. It's against its principles. Like, how could you advocate for private property and its respect and then you're just expropriating? It doesn't make any sense. It just goes against what Prospera stands for. So we promulgated that regulation stating that we renounce any right we could ever have of expropriating any land. And now it's our job to make sure that we just create jobs, create a better regulatory environment, and help the economy of the country.
I'm cognizant of time here. I saw you looking at your watch.
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay, sorry. I thought. Yeah, okay, because I'm fascinated. I'd quite like to go on if that's all right.
I can go all day.
I've got so many questions. What do you think is the biggest hurdle you have ahead of you with regards to local communities, say?
Well, to be honest, I think that we're already crossing that hurdle. And I think the hurdle was public perception. Like right now, as we are increasingly growing and helping the economy of the island, I think that more and more people are noticing that we've never been here to do any wrong. As I've told you before, the community right next to us in Crawfish Rock, they are increasingly getting hired by us. They're getting a lot of benefits from us as well, from school buses being provided, because you could see, like, this is a small community, and you saw the road. It's a long way to the main road, and you would see people just leave here with a small SUV crammed with 10 kids that are trying to go to school. So we have a social program called Prospera Foundation, which essentially is made to help people around the island and catalyze that prosperity that we're already generating inside of here and spreading it around. So through those efforts, we've provided school buses that go on different times a day to take the kids to school back and forth, and we're charging a bare minimum to each parent, which is probably like around $3.5, which could be probably around 3.2 euros per kid a month. So it's already super cheap, like it's cheaper than ever. So we're helping those kids get to school and helping the parents not have to go through that burden. So we're showing how the prosperity we're generating here is leaking out to the rest of the island, that it's not just inside of Prospera, but everybody else. We're buying from local businesses as much as we can. We are looking for people from across the island to hire them and give them better job opportunities. And we're also implementing educational programs to help people learn and achieve the skills they need to eventually apply for jobs here. So that hurdle of public perception is already being worked on. And I see us in a year probably on a very good standing with the rest of the community. As of now, even with the municipality, we've been invited by them to go and offer jobs at the job fair. So it's already been getting better.
I haven't seen the village myself, but what's the what do people do normally prior to Prospera being here? What do most people do in a small Raritan village?
I would love to tell you more about that, but I think Virginia could answer that question better since she is from the community. But this specific community, as far as I know, it's more of a fishing village. They survive on fishing and regular commerce. They go for jobs outside of the village, go into the main part of the islands. But Virginia would be able to tell you much more about that.
Great. We're talking to Virginia after this. So excellent. Right. I've got so many questions that I think you're... is there anything you're noticing I'm not covering here? Like, because this is a very, very new subject to me.
I think that this is an organic conversation that it's just going anywhere it needs to go. So I think that as of now, we are going on a good path.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because I'm piecing together my own version of what this is all about.
And I think that's good for the audience, because a lot of people in the audience probably were on the same standing as you were. So hearing you ask questions they probably already have, it's good for me to just go ahead and
share. Sure, yeah. I mean, I would say I'm ideologically aligned with this. This is the sort of place I would come from. But I'm very interested to know how this all works out in practice and a few of the things. I'm like, one of the things that's standing out to me is it seems like everyone involved is super up for the challenge and ideologically aligned and wants it to work. If this idea spreads and the idea of ZAs becomes more ubiquitous, how does it not end up being a victim of its own success in the same way that I would imagine you know, many systems have. Like, what's the, how do you, right, or we'll try this one. How do you see this? Say in 100 years, if according to what you believe in, where does this end up? Like, what does Honduras and the rest of Central America look like if this kind of model of self-governance and, you know, economic zones, if it proceeds in the along the same trajectory that you feel it would, what does it look like?
It is very hard for me to think negatively about this, because as an insider, and someone who has worked from the outside for quite a while, I see this just as an improvement that is going to keep improving. So in 100 years, I could say Central America has achieved that development stage quicker than it could have under this system. So increasingly more people are looking into what we're doing here as a bar of success and say, okay, I want to keep my eye on that to see how that goes. And the way this is going, and say that we already have our final discussions with the government and we're allowed to operate as is, and we continue to grow and expand and do what we're doing here, I believe that more and more countries are going to start doing it themselves. And my expectancy is that the government itself is going to take note and say, we need to become more competitive to the point that the flexibility that the governments have in Central America is going to become more and more flexible. So in 100 years, I would expect that better practices are just implemented and not be jealous of, oh, it was not made here, but rather like, if we import everything from any other country, what's the problem with importing good regulation? So I think that more countries are going to adapt to that.
And have you seen yourself, former expatriate Hondurans, hearing about these kind of ideas and coming back? Is that something that's a thing?
Yes. As a matter of fact, again, I'm part of the business development efforts, and I get emails every week, like a lot. And some of those emails are literally people from the U.S. saying like, hey, I've been hearing about Prospera quite a lot, and I left because of lack of employment, or my husband had to leave because crime rates were too high, no job opportunities and whatnot. And we've heard about Prospera and we're interested in seeing if this is a way back. So like, I saw it myself and I came running. And as quickly as we were succeeding, I am seeing already people saying, I want to go there. Like I said, I don't want to leave. Like I want to go live in Roatan, or I want to come back and live there in Roatan and Prospera, because it seems to be like a place where opportunities do exist. And not only in the US, because a lot of people just leave illegally, sadly. That it's very hard on any Honduran to think that most people just leave because there's no opportunities here. But it really brightens my day whenever I see people who says, I'm thinking of going back to Honduras to find an opportunity in Prospera, because that's what we are all about. And that's the sense of Prospera, a place where people don't have to leave their country to be successful, to be prosper.
And what about the education part of it? Presumably, if you want to start a, if you want a startup here and you want employees, they need to, say if you want coders, for example, for your startup, there's not much of a talent pool, I would imagine, in Honduras of coders yet, let's say, compared to somewhere else, like say America. So how does the education side of it fit in? Like, do you have to do that yourself here, or is that something that's, you know?
So it's funny you say that, because we do have a good amount of coders in Honduras, and they're pretty good. They're pretty good coders. And there's also a bunch of continued education programs that teach people who have already graduated from any XYZ or have never graduated from anything, like, hey, this is how you code. We have a lot of continued education programs that teach coding, and we are betting on those. We're inviting them in. As a matter of fact, literally a week ago, we had the EdTech Summit, and some of these education technology companies are literally bringing people to the island to teach them how to code, and that would eventually open up their doors to work here. So we don't want to do everything. Like, Prospera doesn't just want to own every building, own every business, or own everything. No, Prospera, it's about creating the platform. And my memory is killing me right now, but someone said, build it and they will come, right? So that's what we're doing. We're creating the platform for people to say, I want to go and do this at Prospera. So once we designed Duna, the tower we have here, we had a mainland developer who emailed us once a week asking us, hey, I want to work with you guys. I want to do something over there. I want to build over there. What can I do? And once we had the design ready, was like, here you go. Do you want it? And he was like, hell yes. I want to do this. I want to develop that building for you guys. So we started joint venture with him to have that building set up. And that's what we're expecting for all other industries, hospitals, universities, schools. We don't want to own them. We want to show people the opportunities there and they can come and do it themselves. And we're going to make it as easy as possible for them to set it up so they can become part of that ecosystem.
And that is part of the essence of a Zete government model, is it?
Yeah.
It's we call that bottom up rather than top down.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So it's a startup city, basically. And a startup managing a city with, of course, a lot of experts and council. But it is a startup, and the city is starting up itself with the help of other startups and other renowned companies.
Right. I'm getting it straight in my mind. Thank you very much. I think we do have to stop now.
Okay.
I can see people saying five minutes. I've got one final question for you, and this is a question that we ask all our guests. And I'm interested to know what your answer is. It goes along the lines of something like this. You have a year sabbatical from your life, during which you have a patron who will fund you. They won't give you the money for your project, but they will make your life... They will pay for your life, and you can do anything you want. What do you do in that year?
So I mean,
it could be exactly what you're doing now, by the way. Like, but do you have something you would do?
Yeah, probably. So one of the things that I enjoy the most is essentially educating. I had the ambition to become a college professor sometime, and as an attorney, most of what we do is educate clients. And one of my biggest passions has been to educate startups. And as you can imagine, it's not necessarily the most lucrative endeavor. However, it's my passion to teach people how to do things in a way that they can become economically free or at least self-sufficient or self-employed. So if it was up to me and say I have a sponsor that's going to keep me alive for a year and I don't have to worry about money, I would most definitely start conferencing all across the country, helping people say, yes, it is possible. Yes, you can do it. And this is the way forwards. This is how you can start up a business from a legal and business standpoint.
Wow. That's obviously something that could easily happen here and probably already is.
It's basically what I'm already doing. I'm making a paper. I'm not giving that much of conference as much as I would like. But yes, that's sort of my job right now. It's teaching people, yes, you can do it and you can come over here and get it done.
And you have the governance model for it, it seems.
That's quite right. So I think it made a lot of sense for me, coming from a startup attorney background, to eventually pivot into business development and actually say, I know everything legal inside of Prospera. Come over. I'll teach you the ways.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much indeed for talking. I certainly feel a lot wiser for it. Yeah, great. Thanks for your time. And
I thank you for the time and the space. Of course, again, this is my passion. This is what I love to do. I am available and at your service if you have any questions further in the future.
Great.
Thank you, everyone.